The Seminoles are in town. Showdown at the box. Tomorrow, 2 p.m. Omaha on the horizon. We'll break it all down for you with the voice of the box and a crafty lefty. More on the New Orleans Saints. Who's going to win the Belmont? A little this, a little that. Oh, we're full steam ahead. All the way up to the rim on this Friday edition. Today, June 7, 2019.
And he lines one to right field. It is high. It is far. It is gone. A three-run bullet blast by Hicks over the bullpen and into the crowd. Hicks hits one to the sticks. He drills a three-run home run, and the Yankees take a 4-0 lead.
The pitch. Fly ball deep center. Drifting back is Riddle at the warning track. It's gone again. Moustakas with home run number 18, and it's 4-0 Brewers.
Here's the pitch. Swing. There's a high fly to left field. This is crushed. Back goes Gordon. Back to the bullpen gate. Watching it sail away. Two-run homer. Mookie Betts into the Red Sox bullpen. And we're tied at two. Mookie Betts is now 7-for-11 against Danny Duffy with five. Count them, five home runs. Can you believe it?
Oh, I can believe it's Friday. How you feeling out there, Acadiana? How are you? Man, thanks for dialing us up as we wrap up another week here of the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. We got something for everybody this weekend and this day. As my main man CD back in the master control suite in the 237 Roof Studios on the campus of Delta Media, KLWB, and 103.7 The Game. You can always email me, askjordy@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at JHS1037. That's how we roll. And that's what we've got for you today. We've got all kinds of super regional conversation coming your way. Bill Franquez will join us shortly. The voice of Alec Box Stadium to go over the history lesson, talk about some of the things that Paul Maneri has said leading up to this very pivotal weekend series. First game, 2 o'clock on Saturday. You know the drill. If you've been listening to LSU baseball all season long here on 103.7 The Game, you know that the pregame show is a half an hour prior. So 1:30 pregame, 2 o'clock first pitch, and then Sunday, 5 o'clock, so 4:30. First pitch at 5, and if necessary, Monday, you got to win 2, first pitch at 7:30 p.m. So stay tuned for that one. Every pitch right here on your source for LSU sports, 103.7 The Game. Eddie Yarnell, we had him on a week ago, the crafty left-hander, will share his thoughts. He played against Florida State. He won a College World Series for LSU. He was the first pick of the LSU Tigers out of that 96 team. He went to the New York Mets, number 76 overall, and some advice he has for some of the six players that were drafted from LSU this year. So we look forward to that. Kind of snuck up on everybody, but the Belmont Stakes are Saturday from Gotham in New York. So we got to get our thoroughbred horse racing analyst, the legendary handicapper, Michael Baychak, will join us in hour number one as well. Larry Holder will share his thoughts on Reggie Bush, Marcus Colston, who the best draft in Saints history. And we'll talk all about that with Larry Holder in hour number two. George Becknell will stop by as well as we do a little this and a little that. But all of that is preceded by my main man, CD, and his Friday Five of Hot Topics. So that's the lineup for the day. Man, we lost We lost an iconic figure, and we've lost a bunch of them lately from the great city of New Orleans. In the past 2 years, I think about it, and I think of, you know, Tom Benson is gone, and Leah Chase from Dookie Chases is gone, and I mean, just a bunch of them. Pete Fountain, Paul Prudhomme, the legendary writer Pete Finney, Fats Domino, and just now, Dr. John. And of course, Dr. John was a legendary figure and a great, great musician that sang so many great songs that you'll know, and as soon as you hear it, you'll recognize a very distinctive voice. And I asked CD to come up with my favorite song. Do you have that CD? There it is. This is my favorite. And when you hear his voice, you'll know it. Legendary. Gravelly. Here we go. I'm just gonna play it for a while. Here we go.
I've been in the right place, but it must have been the wrong time. I'd have said the right thing, but it must have used the wrong line. I've been on the right trail, but it must have used the wrong car. Hit us in a bad place, and I wonder what it's good for. I've been in the right place, but it must have been the wrong time. My head is in a bad place.
Rest in peace, Dr. John. God, legendary. So sad. So sad. All right. LSU baseball. That's where... by the way, game four of the NBA Finals tonight. And it's must win for the Golden State Warriors. Steve Kerr, the coach of the Warriors, came out already and said, no Kevin Durant, but we will have Klay Thompson back. Now, how effective is he going to be? If you're the Toronto Raptors... Whoever Klay Thompson's guarding, you get him the ball, you clear out, and you attack Klay Thompson. And you make him pivot and shuffle and go side to side and plant and cut. You make him do all those things. I'm not trying to be dirty, but that's just what you do. And you test him out early and see. Golden State's got to win it. They can't go behind 3-1. They just can't. Because... they're not going to win 2 games in Toronto. I'm sorry. I know you can say, well, wait a minute. Cleveland did it to Golden State. I understand. That's such an anomaly. Golden State's got to win this game at Oracle Arena tonight. They've got to. Now, I just don't see Toronto shooting 52% from the field, 45% from the three-point line, and 95% from the free throw line again. But then again, can Steph Curry get you 47 again? It'll be interesting to see. Game 4 tonight. But the big story, of course, is LSU baseball as Florida State's made it to town. Both teams have had their official practices on the field. I stopped by there today. Everything is in pristine condition. LSU announced it's a sold-out crowd, so there'll be over 11,000 fans there. It'll be a raucous environment, and two teams coming in red hot, absolutely on fire. And it's going to be exciting. I can't wait to be there. Bringing the kiddos, we're going to have a good time, and hopefully we'll dodge the rain and get these ball games in. But we're going to talk with Bill Franquez here in just a minute and get his perspective on things. Again, it's a completely different ball. This LSU baseball team, enough of you Maneri haters. All right, just enough. Everybody, you know, you lose a game here, you lose a game there, you lose to Southern, you lose to Louisiana Tech, and get rid of the bum. He's terrible. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame coach. Look at his record. Look at his resume. Yeah, he's got a national championship, and I know LSU fans expect more than that. They expect it every year. But, man, who are you going to replace him with? No, Palmieri's doing a great job. He's got this team peaking at the right time, and we'll see how they do this weekend. Look, they win another regional. They're hosting another super regional. I mean, come on, year after year after year, they're consistently in the mix. So enough. Now let's go play baseball. We'll get the voice of Alec Box Stadium coming up next after we take this first time out, Friday edition of the Jordy Helfrich Show, right here, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Come on back.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
We like our beer flat as candy. We like our dogs with mustard and relish. We got a great pitcher, what's his name? Well, we can't even spell it. We don't worry about the pennies much. We just like to see the boys hit it deep. There's nothing like the view from the Chiefs.
All right, welcome back. We're set to get Bill Franquez on. It's going to voicemail, so I'm sure Bill is getting inundated with requests from former players. Can you help me with some tickets? Can you get me this? Can you get me that? So we'll keep trying, and CD will let me know if and when we are fortunate enough to get Bill. But in the meantime, we'll talk a little bit about this regional. And look, these two teams come in. LSU's ranked number 11 by the Collegiate Baseball Magazine. Florida State ranked number 12. LSU's in the NCAA tournament for the eighth straight year and for the 32nd time overall. Florida State's been in this thing a ton of times as well. They've met 18 times since 1955. Each team has claimed 9 wins. So it's split right down the middle. This weekend's Super Regional marks the 7th meeting between the schools in the NCAA tournament, with each team capturing 3 victories in the prior 6 games. Straight down the middle. It is unbelievable. This is Florida State's first trip to Louisiana to play LSU since 1991. Seminoles got an 8-0 win over the Tigers at the Superdome in New Orleans. This marks FSU's first trip to Baton Rouge since 1983, when the Seminoles got 2 wins over the Tigers to wrap up the LSU's regular season. So Cole Henry will get the start for LSU in game 1. He's 4-2 overall with a 3.51 ERA in 56 and a third innings pitched, 69 strikeouts, 15 walks. He'll go up against junior left-hander Drew Parrish, who's 8-5 overall with a 5.07 ERA. He's thrown 81 and two-thirds innings, struck out 112, and walked 29. So that's your game 1 pitching matchup. And in anything else, you got to play pitch by pitch, inning by inning. Mike Martin comes to town with an extremely talented ball club that dominated their regional last weekend. They have been on fire of late, no question. And we are thrilled to get Bill Franquez in. Look, Bill's got to do his job. And look, we got a few minutes to spare with him. Hey, Bill, you all right, buddy? How are you?
Hey, Jordy, I'm sorry. I didn't know if you hear me or not. I've been listening to your very in-depth analysis of the regional there.
Well, we can hear you now. We're glad to have you. Okay. So from what you've seen both teams work out today. What's the mood? What's the vibe at the box?
Yeah, sorry. I had a little difficulty getting with you all. The LSU ended a little early, so we were in the midst of gathering up some players with some media obligations. So LSU just finished up, and the boys are getting ready to head back to their apartments and rest up for tomorrow. Florida State just now hitting the field, so we'll get an opportunity to maybe checked them out a little bit. But, everyone's very excited. The weather, it turns out, looks like the weather's going to look good for the whole weekend, really.
Man, knock on wood, that would be... That would be fabulous.
There's a little bit of a chance of rain later today, but otherwise, the weekend looks really good.
That's awesome. Mike Martin, your thoughts?
Mike Martin, one of the great, obviously great coaching legends in college baseball, but not only a great coach, also just a great ambassador for the game. Such a gracious, humble man who's accomplished so much in 40 years at Florida State. The all-time winningest coach, not only in NCAA baseball history, but in any NCAA sport.
Right.
Over 2,000 wins.
Jeez.
It's just an amazing track record. He's been to Omaha 16 times. If you can call it a tarnish, the only tarnish on his record is he's never won the national championship. But I think what he's done as far as impacting the lives of young men far outweighs any shortcoming in the area of not winning a national championship. So we're definitely fortunate and honored to have his team here. And, of course, once the games start, though, LSU's objective will be beating him. But, it should be. What a great storyline, though, Jordy. As someone I know who has great respect for the coaching profession, you certainly have great respect for Mike Martin, what he's accomplished.
No question. Bill Franquez, the voice of Alec Box Stadium, joining us. I call it the Holy Trinity. You've got Mike Martin, the all-time winningest coach. You've got Skip Bertman, the legendary 5 national championship coach who's played against Mike Martin's clubs in the past. And you've got the Hall of Famer in Paul Maneri. I mean, from a coaching perspective, it doesn't get any better than that.
You're exactly right. Yeah, I'm looking forward to I haven't seen Skip yet here today. Hopefully he'll drop by, but definitely looking forward to seeing Skip and Mike Martin interact a little bit. Of course, they met a few times back in Omaha, but the first time was in 1987. For those as old as you and I are, they may remember that was an extra inning game that LSU had to win to defeat Florida State. And, of course, that 87 team narrowly missed making the College World Series finals. A few years later, in 94, Florida State defeated LSU in a first-round game. In 2000, LSU and Florida State met in the semifinals, Skip versus Martin, and LSU won that semifinal game to advance to the College World Series finals. Mm-hmm. So the Tigers and the Seminoles have a bit of a College World Series history between Skip and Mike, and then, of course, between Paul and Mike just 2 years ago, met Florida State twice in Omaha, and LSU was fortunate enough to win both games and advance again to the finals. So definitely a history between the two programs. Although it's interesting, Jordy, Florida State hasn't been here in Baton Rouge since 1983, which is pretty amazing.
It is amazing. Bill Franquez joining us. All right, so we know that Cole Henry gets to start on Saturday, Landon Marceau on Sunday, which is a flip-flop of what happened in the regional. What's Paul's reasoning behind that, just out of curiosity?
I think he feels like that, when 100% healthy, Henry is the guy. He's the guy that when he's been healthy, he's been LSU's best pitcher. So I think that's what the thought is there. After going into the regional, Cole had only made one brief appearance in the SEC tournament. Now he's had a more of a conventional starting outing under his belt. And I think I think Paul feels like he's more ready now to assume that number one starting role again, as he had, although he never was the number one starter when he was healthy back in the midseason. Now that he's 100% healthy, I think Paul feels like he's truly ready to assume that role.
It's amazing how things have changed. Opening day, it was Zach Hess, then Marceau and Jaden Hill, and now it's just a whole different kind of thing other than Marceau holding down that Saturday, or in this case, Sunday slot. So it's been a long season, my friend.
Yeah, it has. It's been a very unique year, George. Despite all the tribulations and the ups and downs, LSU is exactly where it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
It's kind of ironic. You know, all the agony and the disappointment, of course, there was a lot of highs mixed in there as well. But here, with LSU is right where it's supposed to be, playing host to a Super Regional for a chance to go to Omaha, and I know that this team appears to be ready to take that next step.
Boy, they are hot as a firecracker. But so is Florida State. And when you look at LSU's ranked 11th, Florida State's ranked 12th. They've met a bunch of times. They've split down the middle on these things. So these are two teams that basically they hit exactly the same number. They're both hitting in the 284 as a team, something like that.
I mean, both.
It's kind of scary. It's eerie.
Yeah, it is. You know, very similar numbers.
I think we've lost Bill to the old cell service. So I tell you what, Bill, we thank you for your time. I know you're busy. Go watch the Seminoles workout, and we'll listen to you all super regional long. Bill Frank is the voice of Alec Box. So we appreciate him. Hey, look, he's inundated, including by people like me, who ask and Bill delivers. So, yeah, we got tickets, and it's sold out. There'll be over 11,000 people there at the Box. And, again, Florida State working out as we speak. It'll be a memorable weekend, to say the least. But it all comes down to, you know, you just got to let the adrenaline flow a little bit, then you settle in, and it's like anything else. You just play the game. You play the game, and you got to, you know, pitchers got to pitch. Don't put people on base, right? Be aggressive at the plate. Don't be timid in the period of time that you're there. You worked so hard for all of this. You're not in school. Just play baseball. And be ready. Just be ready. And LSU has seized the moment. They showed me an awful lot against a very good Southern Miss team. When they had the game won, Southern Miss hits a grand slam, ties it up. LSU didn't hang their head. They just went back to work, and they put a three spot on the board immediately after that to really take control of the scenario. And that showed me an awful lot. This team is hot. They're playing well. They've got their pitching staff in order. They're healthy. They're confident. Saul Garza, much better player now than he was a month ago. Hughes and Broussard, much better players than they were a month ago. Beloso, the same thing. You've had the steady factor of Duplantis and Watson. So we'll see. We'll see. Should be exciting. We're going to continue the conversation here as we're going to bring Eddie Yarnell on next to talk about this super regional. He got LSU to a College World Series and won the whole thing on the shot heard round the world by Warren Morris. And then he was a high draft pick in the Major League Baseball draft, which was then held during the College World Series. So we'll share his memories and his thoughts on all of that as we continue here. Friday edition, the Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. We are Acadiana's number one sports station and your source for LSU sports. We'll be right back.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helfrich Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome you back as we continue our coverage of the Baton Rouge Super Regional. LSU hosting Florida State. All the games right here on 103.7 The Game, your source for LSU sports, and brought to you by Hooters. We just heard from the voice of Alec Box Stadium, Bill Franquez. Now let's bring in the crafty lefty who knows a thing or two about postseason play for LSU and maybe some advice for the six LSU Tigers who were just drafted this week into Major League Baseball. He knows a thing or two about that. And, of course, we're talking about our good friend, Mr. Eddie Yarnell. And, Eddie, good afternoon, buddy. How are you?
Good afternoon, Jordy, man. I'm doing good. Getting makes for this big super here at the Box.
Things couldn't have fallen any better. LSU played great in the regional. They got some help from Georgia as Florida State took care of business. Now they get to host again. That's a huge advantage, isn't it?
For sure. I mean, look, it's unpredictable in terms of who's going to win and who's not this time of year. And, I heard Josh Smith say it a few times, and it's very true, especially with Maneri. Is, you know, they seem to kick it into gear at this time of year. And you have your, you know, ups and downs throughout a season and your naysayers and whatnot. But I think as a group, tight-knit group, they've been there. You know, 2017, they had the young Watson and Duplantis and those guys. And, you know, this is kind of their swan song, farewell bid, a lot of these guys. So I think they have a lot to play for, and they mentioned it before. They want to get on that board out there in right field. for you. I mean, that's what you come to LSU for, you know, get on that intimidator and put up another championship. So they're in a great position to do that.
That's why you build this stadium, to get the crowds. It's a sellout. We know now the pitching order. In the regional, it was Landon Marceau first up, then Cole Henry, then Eric Walker. Now he's coached Maneri, and Alan Dunn has switched things around a little bit. Cole Henry will get the start on Saturday, Marceau on Sunday, and if a game three is necessary, Walker. Why Cole Henry now to start things off when it was Marceau to start things off in the regional?
Right, like, good question. And I mean, Paul and Alan Dunn, you know, they know the guys better than anybody. I mean, from an outside looking in guy, Cole Henry, we spoke last week prior to the regionals, and, you know, we were saying they don't really have that number one stopper type guy. And, you know, Marceau's done a nice job the last couple times out, but I mean, Cole Henry's the guy in terms of stuff, you know, aggressive, you know, can power through. I mean, he's doing well. He's up now, I think, where he can kind of let him go into the sixth, seventh inning, or maybe beyond. And you want that guy to kind of set the tone for a bunch of reasons, right? If we can get him six, seven innings tomorrow, helps the bullpen, takes a little pressure off your offense, allows them to kind of get settled in. I think Cole can go out and be dominant the first couple innings. And then, you know, if we get six, seven out of him, man, I really, really like our chances against a upstart kind of, you know, late in the year type Florida State team as well. They didn't play real well early. Mm-hmm. As we all know, it's Mike Martin's swan song, you know, one of the best to ever do it at the college level, and really wanting that championship, I can imagine. So it's going to definitely be an interesting regional. It's not going to be anything boring about it. I mean, the tempo is going to be upbeat. They're going to be, you know, it's a lot on the line for both squads. So I look for Cole Henry to set the tone for us, man.
Eddie Arnold, kind enough to join us. You mentioned Mike Martin. Did you ever play against Florida State?
What's that?
Did you ever play against Florida State?
Oh, you know, we did. And I didn't pitch against them. We played them in 1994. That's going back a ways, up in the old Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome. We played in the tournament. And that year they had Paul Wilson and Jonathan Johnson. And we beat them up there. And then they beat us in Omaha. Paul Wilson threw against us, who was a first rounder back then. So they beat us in Omaha in 94. We beat them earlier that year. We did not face them 95 or 96. But I almost went there, Jordy. That was my second choice if I didn't choose LSU. They had offered me a full ride, and the deciding factor was, well, they hadn't won. And, you know, LSU had just won two. So obviously a wise choice on my part back then to pick LSU and become a part of this, you know, rich history and storied program here. So it's two of the powerhouses, man. It's kind of how it's supposed to be, you know. Yeah. It's kind of like Kentucky and Duke in basketball.
Yeah, you're right. Alabama, LSU in football, and that makes a lot of sense. You know, I'm looking back and I'm thinking about the opening weekend rotation. Zach Hess was the Friday night starter. Landon Marceau was the Saturday starter, and Jaden Hill was the Sunday starter. Boy, how things have changed, haven't they?
Yeah, and you know, that's kind of how teams start. They start, you know, and I always say that's why you play the game, it's not played on paper, because on paper, at the beginning of the year, we were preseason number one,
right.
And some of these other teams weren't even on the map, and now, you know, we took a little bit of a rocky road to get where we're at, but it doesn't matter how you get there. You know, and as long as you finish where you want to finish, and it's a successful season. And at LSU, it's not just Omaha, you know, it's trying to win the whole thing. So it was a little unusual, the season, I guess is a good way to put it for us. But I think we've come together and got the right pieces now to where, you know, you can't be afraid to take chances. And I think roll the dice. And don't get me wrong, Cole Henry's more than capable, but he hasn't shown it the whole year, partly because of, you know, health. But I believe in that kid. I believe in Alan Dunn getting them prepared, and all the coaches over there and the players are ultimately the ones that play it, and they've got a bunch of veteran guys that know what it takes. So they got a great chance, and I think they're going to go out and do some good things this weekend.
They're playing they're really playing great. You mentioned it's not just going to Omaha, but dogpiling at the end. Did you feel that pressure when you stepped on the field as a freshman? Was that part of the culture way back then as well?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, you know, they had won two prior to me, you know, in 94, getting there, 91, 93, and you definitely are aware of it. You don't play with that burden. I think it's more of a responsibility and a want to, you know, upstand and continue on what was laid before you, right? Uh-huh. So all these guys that played before me, you know, Ben McDonald, Paul Berg, Chad O'Shea, you know, those guys, Andy Sheets, Mike Bianco, to know that what they sacrificed and how hard it was for them to get us to there, that now we're there, so to speak. Let's keep us at the top. And a little bit more parity and a little bit tougher nowadays with the added super regional and other, you know, seeds and all that. But still, never the pressure to go out and have to do it. I think it's just, look, let's get prepared and go out and just do what we're capable of doing. I think coaches have a responsibility to not put that on the players as much, and they can kind of take some of that pressure for them, you know, because they're still young kids at the end of the day, and you want them to be comfortable and be able to show their ability.
Eddie Arnold, kind enough to join us. We had six LSU players taken in the MLB draft, current LSU players. Josh Smith was the leadoff in the second round. Zach Watson went in the third. Zach Hess and Todd Peterson in the seventh. Antoine Duplantis in the 12th and Saul Garza in the 32nd. Duplantis went in the 12th because he had no leverage, right? I mean, if he was a junior, I'm sure he would have been drafted higher than that.
Yeah, and look, the draft is an unpredictable thing. You know, it amazes me every year. You hear, this guy's going here and here, and for whatever reason, it changes. You know, partly because, like you're saying, accountability is one thing, but, you know, Antoine being a senior possibly could have went, you know, higher. And the draft's a fun thing because they draft a lot on projections,
right,
and tools. And, you know, Antoine doesn't have the best arm. He's quick. You know, obviously he can hit, but he doesn't hit for a ton of power. He showed a lot more this year.
Mm-hmm.
So a guy like that, to me, is a good, it's a good organizational draft pick, meaning you know what you're going to get.
Right.
And he's going to play the game the right way. He's going to go hit. I mean, you don't forget to hit. I mean, no matter what level. It's not like we're talking he's facing 80 miles an hour now. He's going into pro golf facing 95. I mean, he's hit some of the best arms that are going to be big leaguers.
Right.
So, for me, looking at it from Antoine, yeah, possibly got handcuffed a little bit being a senior, but the opportunity is just as good once you get in. They don't put a label in terms of, oh, well, we don't care because he was a later pick. No, they put more into guys that they spend more money on. But point being is, if he goes and plays the game and hits and is patient, and opportunity is the biggest thing once you get there. If he gets opportunities, he's going to succeed. I mean, he's proven it, you know, enough to where he's a winner. You know, it's the same thing with the Mangum kid over at Mississippi State. You know, not a high draft pick, but, I mean, I think both of them have chances to get to the big leagues.
I mean, Zach Watson came back for another year. He was picked in the 40th round in 2018. He goes all the way now to the third, so brilliant on his part. Zach Hess was a 34th round pick the year before. He's now a 7th round pick. So classic examples of kids that could have left but came back and improved their stock immeasurably.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of it was, you know, I'm sure mentality-wise, unfinished business, so to speak, a little bit with some of them, and knowing that this is a kind of last hurrah for them. But, you know, I think going into this season, they knew what they had in front of them. Every kid's dream, I mean, don't get me wrong, a lot of kids in Baton Rouge's dream is to play at LSU. But ultimately, in the backyard, you dream of playing in the big leagues and making that pitch or hitting that home run in the major leagues. So they still understood that, and they knew that was going to be there. And like I said, it helped some of them, which is great in terms of putting a little more money in their pocket. But once you're in the system, it's just now, I think LSU prepares guys for pro ball a little bit better than maybe some other programs. I'm not talking just the smaller programs. I mean, even the bigger ones in general, partly because we play in front of 10,000. You know, there's a lot of hoopla. There's a lot of, like you were saying, you know, stresses and goals that are put in front of you when you step on campus here. And I think it just helps them develop and handle the pressures of pro ball a little bit better And like I said, I mean, I don't know what the string is, but I think it goes back to almost 20 years probably. There's been a LSU guy.
Yes.
Debut in the big leagues, not just be there, but a guy that just debuts in the big leagues. So, I mean, we're running guys out there pretty regularly at the big league level, which is impressive when you look at 270 Division I programs and all the other JUCOs to be able to say that. So that's something that, you know, LSU's very proud of.
Part of the greatest moment in LSU baseball history when Warren Morris hit the home run to right field to win the national championship. And at that time, the draft was during the World Series, as I remember. And you were the third, the 78th pick overall, third rounder to the New York Mets at the time. How did you hear about you being drafted?
Yeah, well, you know, that's pre kind of internet and all the hoopla with the draft,
right.
and no cell phones for at least college kids. I mean, you know,
right.
We didn't have a cell phone then. And you're correct. We were in Omaha, the old Rosenblatt, and if you recall in right field, they have the Henry Dorley Zoo, right? So
yes.
we were in the winner's bracket, and we had gotten a day off that day of the draft. And I'm like, okay, perfect, great. I'm going to be at home or at the hotel, and I'll be by the phone, and my agent or the Mets will call me, and I'll be able to, you know, share and call my parents and family. And sure enough, coach is like, nope, we're going to go look at some giraffes and elephants at the zoo today, guys. So team outing. And I'm like, look, coach, we're getting dressed. Some of us are getting, well, you know, Ed, you're part of the team. And I said, no, I guess. So I was at the zoo looking at the animals and get back to the hotel. And the old red light on the hotel.
The light's
phone,
bleeping. Oh, blinking. How exciting was that? That's always great. A blinking night light in your hotel room on the old phone.
Takes you back a little bit nowadays.
Yes.
Like, what are you talking about, the young guy? Like, we just get Twitter alerts and Facebook messages. And I said, yeah. So checked the messages and got in contact with the Mets. And they said, hey, Jeff, one of those moments that you don't forget and remember. It's a childhood dream of mine. And I think it helped, too, because we still had a couple games, so it took my mind, not that I was focused on the draft, but it kind of was like, all right, I'm done with that. Now let's go win the championship. And obviously we know how it ended, and it couldn't have worked out better for me personally, but also all my teammates and buddies on that team.
I can remember that hotel vividly, and I can remember the phone vividly. And, man, that was a fun time at the College World Series, man. That was terrific. So, yeah, no cell phones, no internet. You had to go find out because of a blinking message light because you were at the old zoo outside of Rosenblatt. That's a great story. All right, let's close this thing up. What do you anticipate this weekend? What do you think?
I'll tell you, man. I watched Florida State, and they hit the ball in that regional against Georgia, who had obviously some really good arms, right?
Right.
So their offense was hot. Now, to me, offenses don't stay hot forever, and there's a little bit of up and down with them, a little inconsistency. So I'm hoping that, like we said, Cole can set the tone. They have two really good. Their number one guy, Parrish, is legit, and their number two guy is pretty darn good as well. Not that we didn't face any good arms against Southern Miss either, but so I expect Florida State to be emotionally invested here. Coach Martin, you know, being the great coach and motivator that he is, and the boys knowing it's his last year, are going to come out and not leave anything, you know, back, hold anything back. So we're going to have to come out and play, you know, good baseball, you know, kind of error-free baseball, pitch well, and look for a guy or two that didn't really do great in the regional, come out and have a good super region. I'm talking like make their, you know, super region all super regional team type deal.
Right.
Someone we don't expect, you know.
Okay.
Garza kind of was hitting. So I'm looking for him. Now, Josh Smith and Duplantis and Watson will do their things. Velosos, you know. But maybe it's, Chris Reed or somebody comes in and gets that big hit in a big situation. I mean, that's kind of what it takes. You know,
we're going to be playing on, are we going to be playing on Monday? You think it's going to go three?
I'm hoping we go ahead and take care of it, but, I mean, if you're asking me personally, I think we probably end up going three.
Okay.
I think one of those games is going to kind of be a little funny some kind of way where something's going to happen, you know, where it might cost us a little bit. I hope not. But I think ultimately we will get it done in that third game, man. I look you know, that'll build the drama a little bit too.
Absolutely.
You know, take it to that last game.
nighttime baseball at the box. Eddie, thanks so much for sharing some stories. We talked before. I said, I don't know where I'm going with this thing. I'll just play off for you. And I thought it played out pretty dadgum well, man. So thank you.
We'll do good, Jody. We'll make a good team, man.
All right, buddy boy. You take care. Have a great weekend. We'll see you at the box.
All right. Sounds good, Jody.
All right. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back, and we'll talk thoroughbred horse racing. The Belmont Stakes. Michael Baikchok next.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app.
Now the race is on and here comes pride of the backstretch. Heartaches are going to the inside.
Welcome back at 5:37 p.m. Central Time, our time on Saturday, the final leg of the Triple Crown, which should be a beautiful day at Belmont Park. The Belmont Stakes. So let's get right to it. Our handicapper, Baikchok Racing.com, Brisnet.com for all the results you want to get. You want your wallet fat. Let's get in Michael Baikchok, handicapper extraordinaire. Michael, last minute notice. I apologize, buddy. How are you?
I'm good, Jordy. Thanks for having me on. Let's get to it.
We got 10 horses in this thing, including the Preakness winner, War of Will. Let's get to it. What do you think? What's going to happen Saturday?
Well, War of Will is the only horse in the race that has made a start in all three, or will have made a start in all three of the Triple Crown races.
Okay.
That says a lot about his fortitude, especially if you consider in the Derby, he nearly got, you know, taken down in terms of falling down
right.
by the winner, Maximum Security. So, some people have even made the argument, Jordy, this week that, you know, we might be looking at a Triple Crown chance if Maximum Security had not fouled War of Will in the Derby. And certainly his performance in the Preakness, where he just won very nicely, easily, fast time, doesn't you know, undermine that opinion. But we'll never know.
Yeah, this is a mile and a half. This is a whole different beast. Which horse is best suited or best trained or best sired to run a race of that length?
So I'm going to go ahead and get out. Look, I don't want to go 0-3 on the Triple Crown race. So I'm
okay.
I mean, it's been done before by me, but I don't want to do it. I think I have a very strong opinion in this race. I think the horse to beat and the horse that's going to win is Tacitus.
Okay.
Bill Mott trained horse. Now, Mott, as you know, won the Derby with Country House, or he was put up to win the Derby. So he might win two out of the three, but this horse is his home track. He's won in New York. He's been training great. He's bred more than any of the others to run the mile and a half, which you said is a totally different, you know, it's a long distance. He'll never run this distance again. Very long. He just seems to me he's got the tactical speed to sit off and just make his one run, and I would be very surprised if Tacitus didn't run first or second. So that's my Belmont pick. Now, you know, to get the rest of them, you got to go to brisnet.com and get all the underneaths and all the other races. Tomorrow is a fantastic card, but I really think Tacitus is going to prove himself to be one of the top three-year-olds of the year tomorrow. At 5:37, you said something
like
that.
Yeah, 5:37. That's
yeah.
it. I remember Tacitus in the Derby. Looked like he was trying to get a hold of that sloppy ground, but once he got his bearings, man, he came roaring home late. So it seems to me, as per your comment, he's got some kick left in him down the stretch, and it should be a beautiful day. So I don't think the grounds are going to be anything bad. Speaking of which, I've got to ask you. What in the heck is going on at Santa Anita? Another horse dies? What is going on?
You know, yeah, the rate of that horses are dying there over the past 60 days is not unusual. And I hate to say that, but, you know, it's really not. They've had three or four horses in the past 60 days die. But it was the 26 horses that died in the 60 days before that, you know, that is still fresh in everyone's mind. And so now this is, I think, the 29th horse that has died. And it's, you know, look, racing has a has an image problem right now. I don't think it's just California. They certainly had a very bad spell for a while, but we need to do something to address it. And in my opinion, you know, racing as a whole is really not doing enough to address the safety issues that we face.
Brisnet.com. He gave you Tacitus. You'll get all the other picks. Brisnet.com. Michael, thanks, buddy. Enjoy the Belmont.
Thank you, have a great weekend. All right, good luck to everybody. Good luck.
Thank you, buddy. All right, we'll take a timeout. Hour number one in the books. A busy second hour. Come on back. The Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game. 103.7TheGame.com. Tacitus. All right.
From the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7TheGame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Oh, it's hour number two of two and away we go. Friday edition this June 7th, the year 2019. A lot of super regional talk in hour number one. LSU and Florida State get things underway Saturday, 2 p.m. You can listen to all the games right here on 103.7 The Game. We'll have some Saints talk and a lot of fun here in hour number two, starting off with what we always do at this time of day. CD takes control. It's time for the Friday Five on this day's edition of Hot Topics. CD, button, please.
It's Friday. That means we get you ready for the weekend ahead with five,
one, two, three, four, five
big questions headed into your weekend. Now, let's get it going with your Friday 5 edition of Hot Topics.
All right, Mr. Domain, host of Under the Dome every Saturday morning, right here on 103.7 The Game. Fire away, my friend. How are you?
I am doing fantastic, Jordy. It is Friday, so let's get straight to it. Of course, I think one of the big things everybody's talking about is the way LSU's weekend rotation is looking with Cole Henry. He's going to be getting the start in Saturday's game. Are you surprised about that?
You know, nothing surprises me anymore. Maybe a little bit. Maneri has always come out and said he's got the best stuff when he's 100%, which tells me he's now 100%. So give him the ball. He picks last Saturday, so he's got his full complement of rest. Marceau was always kind of the second picture. So as long as Marceau's cool with it, as long as they're all on the same page and everybody's pushing and pulling the rope in the same direction, let's go. Let's do it. Let's see what happens.
Oh, I agree, Jordy. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens. This three-game set is absolutely, obviously going to be crucial. But do you think it winds up going three games, or will this kind of be a sweep regardless of who winds up coming out on top?
Man, they're so evenly matched. I just think for dramatic purposes, I think it comes down to Monday. I really do. Eric Walker will be the picture for LSU if it gets to that game. Of course, I hope LSU wins Saturday and Sunday and puts it to bed. I think Florida State's got a lot of fight in them. I think they're fighting for their coach. When they lose their last game, that'll be it for Mike Martin. So I think this one evenly matched. They're hot. They're swinging the bats really, really good as well. So I see a Monday night winner-take-all situation.
It's a win-one. It's a win-one for the Gipper mentality for the Florida State Seminoles, at least from what we're seeing with Mike Martin obviously going to hang it up when it's all said and done. And it's just crazy to think that a lot of this is going to be put in the hands of a pair of freshmen, Jordy. You got Cole Henry and Marsa both getting the start. It definitely shows a lot of faith in the future of LSU baseball, at least from the pitching staff with these two guys at the helm.
Yeah. And they get Jaden Hill healthy back next year. There's your Friday, Saturday, Sunday right there.
Hopefully.
Hopefully, if they're all healthy. And gosh, I've said this for so many years, LSU's due for some good health, so maybe next year will be the one. But look, LSU's where they want to be, where everybody anticipated them to be. Maybe they didn't take the straight road to get here. Maybe they took some exits and ran off into some country roads. But when it all push comes to shove, they are where they're supposed to be. They're at home hosting a regional. That just doesn't get any better than that.
Jordy, that's going to be just one heck of a series to keep an eye on this weekend. But there's other stuff going on this weekend as well, of course. We got the NBA Finals Game 4 tonight in the Oracle Arena, and it's definitely going to be a fun one over there. Can't wait to see what happens. You know, who's going to have to really step up? Is it going to have to be Klay Thompson to try and take some of the load off of Steph Curry, or is somebody else going to have to step up in that crew to be able to get this team going in Game 4?
That's a good question, and I think it, much like the Raptors, have been a collective unit. They've gotten great production from Gasol and Lowry and Van Fleet and Siakam. You know what you're getting with the Claw, but Kawhi Leonard. But I think Draymond Green's going to have to play better, shoot it better. I think Klay Thompson's going to have to come into form. I think Andre Iguodala's going to have to play better. And I don't know what to expect from Boogie Cousins. Jeez, some peeps. But it's going to take a collective effort, and Steph Curry's going to have another sensational scoring day. It's going to take a collective group to beat this team. Because, look, Toronto's defense is really, really good. Yep. Leonard, great ball defender. Lowry, tough, physical. Siakam, length. Gasol was an NBA Defensive Player of the Year. And Van Fleet, I mean, they're really good defensively. So everybody for the Warriors are going to have to be dialed in, and they're going to have to play better defense and not allow Toronto to shoot 52% and 44% from three and 95% from the free throw line. Stop fouling them. So it'll be interesting. It'll be a battle royale tonight. I can promise you that.
And that's why I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to happen. Game 4, Warriors. That's just going to be a ton of fun, Jordy. And what else is going to be a ton of fun is what's going on in Natchitoches, Louisiana, the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. And my goodness, it is star-studded, obviously. Roger Cador, big highlight, Les Miles, Peyton Manning. I could go on and on about it, how many great members of the Hall of Fame class there are this year. And it got me thinking, is this like one of the best Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame classes of all time?
Oh, it's pretty darn good. You got some iconic figures. There's no question about that. So, arguably the greatest quarterback to ever play, come from the state of Louisiana, in Peyton Manning. Les Miles wins a national championship. Roger Cador, with all he did at Southern University to take that baseball program to the heights that they reached. It's pretty darn good. Dave Nitz, the longtime play-by-play voice of the Louisiana Tech Bulldogs. You got a cowboy in there. You've got a tennis referee in there. You got all kinds of. I don't know if it's the greatest class ever, but it's right up there, headlined by Manning and Miles, the M&M boys. How about that?
It's going to be fun to see, like, just to hear what's going to come out of Les Miles' mouth. It's always entertaining to hear him, but now that he's not necessarily having to coach and he can let loose, so you can about imagine how much fun that's going to be for about an hour or so.
I saw him yesterday. They had kind of a press conference to kick things off, and man, Les has really dyed that hair dark, man. I mean, it is really dark, but he's smiling, he's having fun, and good for him from being there. The only person who wasn't there yesterday was Peyton Manning, but he'll be there when it counts with the induction ceremony on Saturday. So, should be a lot of fun up there. It's a beautiful place. If you haven't been to the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame in Natchitoches, it's a beautiful building right there on the river. It's worth a trip to go visit historic Natchitoches and go see some of the legendary figures that are in that hall.
It really is. It's a really cool experience. Definitely, if you're a sports fan, knock that off your bucket list. And, of course, Jordy, we'll move over to the NFL because big news coming out of there yesterday, not long after we kind of wrapped up the show over here. Eagles giving Carson Wentz a monster 4-year extension, $128 million.
Wow.
Highest in NFL history with $107 million in guarantees. Is he worth that much?
Woo-hoo-hoo. I don't know, man. Look, Bryce Harper, he got a huge contract. He's struggling a little bit in Philly. Philly fans are not very sympathetic. They see the dollar figure. They want production. They're a blue-collar town. Carson Wentz, he'll see if he can stay healthy. But, boy, they've certainly said, okay, here's the baton. You're our guy. There's no more Nick Foles looking over your shoulder. You're our guy. Let's go. Super Bowl or we'll see how he handles it. Got to stay healthy first and foremost. But, man, that's
exactly
good. That's baseball numbers there. That's guaranteed money. That's crazy.
It's amazing, Jordy, to see how much these quarterbacks are getting paid. And it's got to make you think that maybe, just maybe, they might wind up regretting that whenever you look at what the New Orleans Saints have done with these big money deals, what the New England Patriots are doing. Kind of, you have Tom Brady willingly take pay cuts over the years to help get star players in there. Yeah. This could wind up biting him in the backside before long.
We shall see. It's the most important position on the field, and that's why we got so many kids coming up playing quarterback. They said, man, look at the money that's out there. Let's play quarterback. Huh? Right? There's your five. Friday edition. Clint, thank you so much, buddy. Great job all week long, as always. We'll shift to the New Orleans Saints. Larry Holder will join us next. Hot Topics brought to you by the best hot sauce everywhere. And that is Cajun Chef Hot Sauce. Do yourself a flavor. Bring a small bottle of Cajun Chef Hot Sauce wherever you go. You go into the box, you're tailgating, bring it with you. Everything tastes better with Cajun Chef Hot Sauce on it. Larry Holder, The Athletic, next. Welcome you back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. Time to catch up on some things down in the Crescent City with the terrific writer for The Athletic and friend of our program, Mr. Larry Holder. Larry, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
I'm good, Jordy. How are you, my friend?
I'm sad. I mean, we've lost some iconic figures in the city of New Orleans, and just now, Dr. John, man, my gosh, what's going on?
Yeah, it's really been... And you just think last couple of years of just some of the iconic figures who passed, and especially this week, well, these last couple of weeks when you've had, Dookie Chase and Dr. John, and then of New Orleans fame, Ronnie Burgess. And these are all classic New Orleanians that people, maybe if you don't live here, you might not understand. Now, Dr. John, you'd understand because he's a people know him global, but still, these are New Orleans iconic figures. And I'll just put it to you this way, though. It is kind of heartwarming when, say, you put on WWOZ right now and it's all Dr. John and they're playing tribute to him. Yeah, it's must listen to radio. Absolutely.
One of my all-time favorite songs. Must have been the wrong place. Oh, that's one of my all-time favorites. Speaking of iconic figures, the Saints announced their Hall of Fame class for 2019 with Reggie Bush, Marcus Colston headlining. I said this before. I know Reggie Bush was terrific on the field, but I think the fact that he was drafted and what status he brought and at what time in the Saints' history that he came on board, I think that the energy and the excitement that he brought far superseded anything he did on the field. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And I have a column up about Reggie Bush right now at The Athletic. And I wrote a column actually earlier this offseason ranking the draft picks of the Sean Payton, Drew Brees, Mickey Loomis era together.
Ooh.
And I put Reggie Bush number one, and people were kind of taken aback by it because I kind of did a straw fan poll, and people didn't even have – Reggie Bush in the top 10, but I look at it differently, just the same way you look at it. There's no one in that draft class, there's no one in I don't know how many draft classes even afterward that would have brought the same reaction that Reggie brought. And, you know, he's someone who came to New Orleans and he was certainly a coddled superstar athlete.
Yeah.
And by the time he left the Saints when he was traded to Miami, he was a different person and a humbled person and someone that you look at now, especially when I had a chance to catch up with him earlier this week. And he's just someone who is at peace with his career and someone who is just absolutely thrilled and ecstatic that he's in the Saints Hall of Fame, and he had a piece, a major piece in the history of not only just the Saints, but he understands the gravity of what he brought.
Yes.
Now more than ever, and he absolutely appreciates it. And I know Saints fans, even though he wasn't Gale Sayers or Barry Sanders like everyone expected him to be, I think Saints fans still in general can appreciate what Reggie Bush was and still is to the Saints organization.
People back then, God bless, were looking for anything to escape the reality that they looked at every day from Katrina. And he brought that energy and that excitement and that hope. And that's why I said what I said to you. And I think we're in agreement with that. Nobody expected. I got to be honest with you. When they drafted Marcus Colson, I didn't know Hofstra had a football team, to be quite honest with you. Got to be one of the biggest surprises in the history of the NFL draft.
Well, Jordy, they don't have a team anymore. They killed football. So there you go.
Oh, my God.
As far as Hofstra. And so, yeah, it's pretty cool that I'm part of the State's Hall of Fame committee who votes for players to get in and contributors and such. And it was pretty cool to have Reggie Bush and Marcus Colson going together. And Marcus, I mean, he's still the same guy, low-key guy, that he's ever been, and yet I chatted with him, and I've become friends with him throughout his playing days, and more so even afterward. And he appreciates this accolade. He was not one to worry about, all right, I've never been to a Pro Bowl, which is still amazing, but he's never been to a Pro Bowl, and yet he appreciates this accolade tremendously. And so the fact that and you look at Marcus. And I'm not sure that Michael Thomas has the same success without Marcus Colson, because Sean Payton has a blueprint, and it was Marcus Colson before Michael Thomas. And then you can look at the same way with Alvin Kamara. Reggie Bush is the blueprint for Alvin Kamara. And so you could look at it that way. And there are two of the pillars. Without them, the Saints don't have the success that they have. And so Marcus Colson, he's always going to be remembered as one of, if not the best receiver ever to play for the Saints. And people, including Sean Payton, didn't think that originally. And that's always a running joke where, Marcus Colson was too heavy and couldn't handle rookie minicamp. And then training camp comes and he's good enough for Sean Payton to feel confident enough to trade Dante Stallworth. And the rest really is history for Marcus Colson.
That is so accurate. Larry Holder of The Athletic, kind enough to join us. You've piqued my curiosity. You had Bush number one. I don't know how much of the story you want to give, but kind of give me the top. Can you give me the top five draft picks, in your opinion, under the Sean Payton era?
Boy, I got to try to remember it, because I did this right before the draft. So I'd put Reggie Bush one. I'd say Jari Evans two. Okay. Marcus Colson three. I think it was Michael Thomas four and Alvin Kamara five.
That's
four or five
good.
Might have been flipped, but those are the top five. And, well, actually, I take that back. No, because I left out Cam Jordan. I put Cam Jordan among that top five, too. So how about that's my top six. Those players
six.
Within my top six. So,
it may be too early. It may be too early to compare and contrast, but that 06 draft and the draft of Thomas and Kamara and company – That's two pretty good ones. I know you've probably done a history of the drafts that the Saints have had. Where, I mean, is there a best of the best?
Yeah, those two are certainly comparable. But look, 2006, I would have to put that above all of them, because you also got to add in that they were able to trade and acquire Jeff Fain in that draft.
Okay.
And they also traded and acquired Hollis Thomas, and those two, especially the first season, they played a big role in that, getting to the NFC Championship game. But yeah, you look overall, and unfortunately for the Saints and Sean Payton's faulty vision of Rob Ninkovich, by the end he thought Rob Ninkovich could be a long snapper. And oh, by the way, he would probably be in the Patriots Hall of Fame.
Yes, yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah. So it's,
but you had Roman Harper. You had Zach Streif, Jari Evans. I mean, that's not too shabby.
Oh, yeah, and then you throw in Marcus Colson and Reggie Bush. And I mean, that was the building block. If they didn't have that draft, Sean Payton would not be employed with the Saints because the team wouldn't be as good. I mean, let's be frank. It changed everything. It changed Drew Brees. He wouldn't be as prolific without that draft.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have won the Super Bowl without that draft. And you, that one has to rank among the best. I'm not just talking Saints history. I'm talking NFL history.
No question. Larry Holder, The Athletic. I never thought I would say in my lifetime that Larry Holder and Sean Payton have something in common, but you do. You, because you lost a bet, but Sean Payton, you both shaved your head. What's up with that?
Yeah, but Sean Payton is doing it for a far more valiant cause. He's doing it to support a friend who has cancer, and me, I just did it to because I lost the bet. So, I'd like to say, I'd like to put it side by side. I think actually Sean can pull it off because he's always kept his hair pretty short. Now, me, it was a drastic change. Like, I'm chopping off frat boy hair, LSU frat-tastic hair. Man, it was Bama bang. It was a far more drastic pull for me to do that.
But he sees you now, and he sees that there's hope. There's a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, right?
Well, you never know. I mean, everyone always says, look, you shave your head, it might not grow back the same. So I'm curious to see how Sean grows back. I mean, but it might not. I mean, look, he might be just molding into Bill Parcells' plant. I mean, he might just keep it short, and you never know.
You never know. You follow all the sports. You're an LSU guy. You understand all that. What do you think about the Super Regional with 40-year veteran Mike Martin and the swan song coming to Baton Rouge?
Look, I look at it as in Florida State. They typically blow it, right? So, hey, what's the – no, but it's definitely the premier. You look at the regionals, the Super Regionals, and it seems – it's kind of like mano a mano. And so, yeah, look, and the fact that LSU, they're still at home, I mean, very fortunate. And it's amazing how all of a sudden there's people are angry and upset about the LSU program. And they're back where they right where they thought they would be. And then you look at it and, wow, they could end up in the College World Series. And what are the naysayers going to say after that? So it's, that's why it always bugs me that so many people go after Paul Menary. It's always bugged me.
It really is.
I don't understand it. Like
They're
only a great program every year in and year out. And college baseball is not the same landscape as it was when Skip Bourbon was the coach. I mean, people invest more in college baseball now. Well, it's I think it's going to be exciting. I'm curious to see how LSU's pitching holds up. So, I know you'll be watching, and you know I'll be watching as well.
Absolutely. Larry, thanks for the time, my friend. Always fun. Enjoy the weekend.
All right, Jordy. Good talking to you, buddy.
All right, buddy. You take care. Larry Holder of The Athletic. We'll take a timeout. George Becknell, a little this and a little that. Next, the Friday edition, the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. It's a Friday edition, and that means it's time to bring in my good friend, George Becknell, as we talk a little this and we talk a little that. By George, how you been, buddy? How are you?
Man, I'm fantastic, brother. How are you?
I am good. Got a lot to talk about, a lot of stuff going on. Game 4, Raptors-Warriors, with the Toronto leading it 2-1. No Kevin Durant again tonight, but Klay Thompson coming back. Must win for the Warriors, right? Must win.
Oh, it's definitely a must win, Jordan, because they don't have home court advantage. So for them to win the series, they have to steal one in Toronto, right? So, of course, they have to take care of business in Game 4. You can't go down 3-1. I mean, it's happened before, but you can't take those type of chances. They're on their heels. Klay Thompson's not 100% healthy. You don't have Kevin Durant. Boogie Cousins, they're desperately trying to get some stuff out of Boogie. Boogie looks like he's 87 years old on the court.
He does.
Like, they have to get this done tonight for them to have any shot to win the series. And it's weird coming. It's weird hearing me say that because we're so used to the Warriors being dominating everybody, being dominant, excuse me, and taking care of business. But if they don't get it done tonight, it's over.
Oh, I just amazing. We think, oh, the greatest shooting team ever. Well, you got Steph and you got Clay. Then after that, who's more mind-boggling to me, to you, the lack of shooting ability of Sean Livingston or the fact that Boogie Cousins looks like he's 87 years old?
Well, to me, it's Sean Livingston.
God.
You know, because Boogie's not 100% healthy. Then he got hurt again, so his condition has to be bad. He shouldn't even be playing, but they're forced to play him because they're not deep enough. But Sean Livingston, to me, because if you think about it, before Kevin Durant got there, think about the type of minutes, the type of contributions, people like Sean Livingston, Harrison Barnes, and Iguodala had. Like, they wouldn't have won the championship without some of those key pieces. And now you're looking at Sean Livingston 3-4 years later, and he looks like he can't even contribute anything. He's just there as a body off the bench because they don't have any depth. So I'm shocked to see Sean Livingston play as bad as he's played because he contributed so much on some of those past championship teams.
Hey, you got to fill me in on this. What's going on with Jay-Z, the Golden State Warriors owner's wife, and why is Beyonce so ticked off? All I heard was she asked Beyonce if she'd like something to drink. She said, yes, water. She asked Jay-Z. Jay-Z didn't hear, so she leaned over and asked him again. He said, give me a vodka and something. And Beyonce's all bent out of shape. Whoa. And now there's death threats. What's going on with this?
Man, I have no idea. All I know is the picture I saw of Beyonce's face. You knew that somebody was in trouble. She must have gave Jay-Z an earful before when they got home. Because she was not happy. I don't know. Everybody's saying that it was so disrespectful because I guess the lady leaned over to her to say something to Jay-Z. But in the scenario you just described, I don't see it that big of a deal. But, you know, she got to have something to talk about because the Warriors have been playing so bad. You know, so you got to you gotta talk about something off the court, man. Drake wasn't in Oracle, so I guess that's the next door.
You can't tick off Queen Bee's fans, I guess. Gee whiz. That's unbelievable.
Oh,
all right,
man,
let's get back to another thing. Yeah, the hive.
The Beehive is something serious, man.
Yeah, that's I don't understand all that. But anyway, let's move on. What about the Brooklyn Nets? They made a trade, gave away some picks, clearing cap space. Kyrie and Durant, are you buying that?
I think they're going to make a shot. They're going to make a run for it, you know, because if you look at it, Brooklyn's in New York. It's a major market. You know, they got a fairly new arena.
Better than the Garden.
You got an all-star. It's better than the Garden. The Garden is just so historical, but it's old, man. You know, you got D'Angelo.
Stop right there. You talk about historical. These kids that are 20, 19, 20, 21 years old, what? They don't know anything about the Garden. They don't know anything about Willis Reed and Dave DeBuscher and Dollar Bill Bradley and Walt Frazier. They don't know about Muhammad Ali fighting in there and Frank Sinatra singing in there. That's so long ago to these kids. They have no historical perspective of the Garden. Brooklyn, brand new glitzy arena. Jay-Z's a part of it. Beyonce's right?
Yeah, I mean, you got a point, you know. I mean, I guess I'm just a historian. So, like, when I sat in the Garden, I felt like I was in mass. I was like, man, this is immaculate. But you're right. You know, Brooklyn has more appeal to these younger players than the Knicks do because the Knicks have been terrible. Like, the Knicks have been the definition of NBA dysfunction, the Lakers are second at this point. But it's not an attractive place. So you got Brooklyn right across the street almost. Who's got all these things going for them? Yeah, it's a good place, and they got cap room. I fully expect them to get two big time free agents and have the Nets back competitive in the East.
George Becknell, kind enough to join us, a little this, a little that. For the first time in NCAA baseball history, one conference division has five teams in the super regionals. Yeah, how about that? Vandy, Mississippi State, Arkansas, Ole Miss, and, of course, LSU. LSU hosting Florida State. What you got? What do you think?
Vandy, I never, ever bet against the Tigers at this point of the year. It's just something about those gold jerseys in the summertime, Jordan. I always think that they'll be fine. They always seem to, whatever little issues they have, they get it together for this time of year, and I fully expect them to make another run at Omaha.
I'm with you. Think it goes three games, or is it going to go two?
Two.
Ooh.
It's two. They're going to take care of business. They got it on their mind, Jordan. It's going to be a wrap.
All right. Death taxes, and Rafa Nadal at the French Open, right? He just blitzkrieged Roger Federer. These guys have been doing this forever and a day. When is somebody going to take these other guys and push them to the side? But Nadal at the French Open, it's like, I mean, it's a foregone conclusion, it seems like.
Absolutely. You know, those two names, Jordan, I mean, if you think about it, I'm 34 years old, right? There's four names.
God, I hate you.
You know, in tennis history that I just remember, you know, dominating my whole life. You got Nadal and Federer, and before them you had Andre Agassi and Pete Sampras, and that's all you had. You know, these guys are just dominating.
You aggravate me. You don't even mention Borg and McEnroe and Connors because you're too young. Jeez, killing me.
I'm sorry. I can go that far back with you in the NBA, though.
All right, speaking of some names, I posed this question a while back, and who do you dislike more? Who did you want to beat more? Steve Spurrier in his prime when he was coaching the Florida Gators and he was running up the score on everybody and anybody, or the present-day Nick Saban at Alabama?
It's Steve Spurrier for me. You know, Don't get me wrong. Nick Saban aggravates me. I hate Alabama, and the fact that he used to be our coach annoys me. But Steve Spurrier used to do things purposely to irritate people. Like, I remember when LSU first went back to the white jerseys.
Yeah.
And the only team that wouldn't let LSU wear the white jerseys at home.
That's right.
Was Steve Spurrier in Florida. You know, like he always just did little stuff to irritate people. Like one time he even wore white jerseys at home in Florida so LSU would have to wear purple jerseys. You know, and then he always ran up the score on us. That's why the 97 game with Herb Tyler, Kevin Falk, and all those guys, when they beat Florida at home and Florida was number one, is one of my favorite LSU games ever. If Steve Spurrier, if I saw this dude in the mall tomorrow, I'm a speed walk just so I could beat him the way he's going. I want to beat Steve Spurrier.
That's interesting because you get a mixed bag on that, and a lot of people forget about Spurrier. Saban doesn't run the score up. Spurrier had a thing against LSU because he wanted that LSU head coaching job when he was being lured away from Duke. And they wouldn't even interview him. And I think he had a personal vendetta against LSU, and any chance he had of rubbing it in and rolling it up, he did. And many a time he was successful.
Yeah, but Jordan, who made Steve Spurrier retire? You know, he came down here, got his butt whipped in Tiger Stadium, then he had to retire.
Yeah.
That might not be why he retired, but that's my story.
Speaking of that, former LSU coach Les Miles is being inducted this weekend into the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. When I mention Les Miles, what do you think of?
I think of victories that LSU had that made absolutely no sense. Like the games that LSU shouldn't have won. And things happen in these games that should never happen. You know, like you think about the 13 men on the field call Tennessee. Against Tennessee when he only sent Jordan Jefferson in with one play. You think about, was it Auburn at home in 07 where you're losing by three, you got a timeout, but instead of calling a timeout, bringing the field goal unit on, he throws the ball in the end zone and time expires. And Burge is happy to catch the ball. Yeah. Or you think about the fake field goal at Florida that bounced in the straight line. It wouldn't have fallen past.
Yeah.
All this crazy stuff happened under Les Miles. Things that made absolutely no sense. But LSU won the game anyway. But I will give this credit to Les. Les Miles ran a program. He took care of his players. Either his players graduated or they went to the NFL. Mm-hmm. For the most part, LSU players didn't get in trouble. They did well for themselves. He ran a program that didn't get any type of sanctions on them or anything like that. The man ran a respectable program despite how bad his offensive philosophy was. And he carried himself well. I think he represented the school well. So congratulations to Les Miles. He deserves it.
It truly was a Dickens novel. It was the best of times, and it was the worst of times. You mentioned those games, the fourth down, going forward against Florida, and then the debacle in the Superdome, and then the hard-headed stubbornness of himself. I just remember the white cap, the eating of the grass, and the goofiness after the games were over, and we would do his television show, and how silly of a man he was. And I'm like, how in the hell are we winning football games with this guy? But I guess when he just kind of let loose and he had fun with it. And the thing I always remember, his players loved him and they always played hard for him. There was never a game when they were flat. They always played hard. They didn't win every game, but they always played hard and they loved the guy. And that's, golly, God bless you, Les Miles. God bless you. All right, what else? Who's got game four tonight, by the way? We'll go back full circle to the beginning. Golden State going to win it, Toronto going to basically put a nail in the coffin?
I tell you what, I'm feeling Toronto on this one. You know why? They went to Oracle. They beat up Golden State pretty good. Honestly, I know Clay was hurt, but there was no celebration in the locker room. Kawhi was just like, this is the next step. We just handling business. Those guys have their eyes on the prize. I feel like Golden State's on their heels a little bit. I've never seen them like that. So I got to go with Toronto in game four to get it done tonight.
I do not see Toronto shooting 52% from the field, 44% from three, and 95% from the free throw line. I just can't imagine them doing that again. If they do, God bless them. Go ahead and have your coronation. We the North, Jurassic Park, go ahead and do it. I just don't see it. I think the Raptors take one back. I think the Warriors win it tonight, and we head back to Toronto for game five. Maybe we'll get seven out of this thing. We shall see. Bye, George. Is there anything else we need to cover? I can't think of anything.
I think we took care of it.
Going, gone. Have a great weekend, buddy. We'll talk to you soon. It's always fun. Thank you.
Will do. Always a pleasure, Jordan. Take care now.
All right, my man. That's George Becknell. A little diss, a little dad. Back to wrap things up. This is the Jordy Helpert Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Oh, what a week it has been. And I got to be honest with you, if you had asked me a week ago, is LSU going to be playing at home again for a super region? I said, no way. I had Georgia winning their regional, and I'm not so sure what I expected from LSU, to be quite honest with you. But LSU took care of their business, and Florida State did us a favor. Now, Florida State comes in red hot. There's no question. And we've talked about it all week long. So it will be so prominent and prevalent that LSU's pitchers do their job and do it effectively. It would be great if LSU could put some runs up early and take some of the pressure whereas Cole Henry in game one wouldn't have to be so precise in his thought process. Get a couple runs, and he can just rear back and fire and let the defense behind you play. But, look, this is the best super regional out there. We call it the Holy Grail. You've got the legendary Mike Martin, the all-time winningest coach in college baseball history, 40 years. They've been to 24, 25 straight NCAA tournaments. I mean, he's never won the whole shebang. You've got the legendary Skip Bertman, who's won five of them. He's going to be in attendance at this thing. And you've got the Hall of Fame coach who's won a championship in Paul Menary, and LSU fans are desperately wanting another one. It's been quite a while since they put up another logo on that intimidator in right field. So it's the Holy Grail. It really is. And there's a reason why this thing is being played out on the networks that it's being played out on. This is the one. I went by there today, got some tickets, and you can feel the excitement. The field looks great. They're painting it, lining it all up, and getting it ready. Teams have had their practices for the day, and now it's time to lace them up and go. So it's going to be fun. It's a sold-out super regional, as expected, as per the norm. And let's just hope that we can dodge rain bullets and get these games in at their allotted times, and let's see what happens. And hopefully by this time, either Monday, we're talking about LSU in the Super Regional, going to Omaha, or the season's over, or we're playing a game three, one game winner take all. It's basically that in the NBA Finals. It's basically a one game for the Golden State Warriors that they have to win. If they don't win this one, that's a 3-1 lead for Toronto, and I just don't see the Warriors pulling off a Cleveland Cavaliers thing and winning three straight. I just don't see it. So lots on the line on this one. So time to do our daily history lesson, and for that we go back in time, June 7th, the year 1981. The French Open going on as we speak, and it was Rafa Nadal with a straight set win over Roger Federer. Well, back then, it was all about Bjorn Borg, the Swedish superstar, and on this day, he won his 11th and final career Grand Slam title when he defeated Ivan Lendl in five sets, 6-1 in the fifth and deciding set. Borg won six French Open championships. And there's a great documentary going on right now, Fire and Ice, the great combatants of Bjorn Borg, the stoic Swede, against the volatile John McEnroe. Really, really good stuff. I just saw it. It was absolutely terrific. But Bjorn Borg, on this day, won his final Grand Slam title, his sixth French Open, his 11th overall, June 7th, 1981. And today is your birthday. Well, from all of us, Delta Media, KLWB, 103.7 The Game, we wish you the very, very best day. Hope you have cake and ice cream and presents and just a lot of fun. Enjoy your day. You share it with the likes of 23-year-old running back of the Carolina Panthers, Christian McCaffrey. He was instrumental in changing the image of the NBA. He had the tattoos, the clothes, and he didn't like to practice. Practice? Are we talking practice? Allen Iverson, 44 years old today. He's become one of my favorite actors. Action figure. I never thought of that, and he wasn't that until he got older. But Liam Neeson, happy 67th birthday to Liam. And it's not unusual to be loved by anyone. The hip shaker, Tom Jones, happy 79th birthday. And two gone but never to be forgotten, born on this day, Prince, and from the Rat Pack, Dean Martin. Nothing better than old Dino. Sinatra, Dean Martin, oh yeah, Sammy Davis Jr., the Rat Pack. There you have it. All right. That's going to wrap things up for the week. Again, good luck to the LSU baseball Tigers, and we'll see what happens there. We'll see what happens in the NBA Finals. We'll see who wins the French Open. We'll get started on Pebble Beach and the U.S. Open on Monday, and so much more. CD, you're the best. Thank you for all your hard work all week long. Thanks to all of you for listening in whatever form or fashion that you do. And thanks to our partners that make it possible each and every day. We have only one Friday, June the 7th. Hope you have a great afternoon and evening, and even better weekend. Go out and enjoy it. Come on back Monday, same time, 2 to 4 p.m., same great station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Until Monday, God willing, I'm Jordy Helfer. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty. So long, everybody.